Don't know if you've thought about the fact that God knows where you are right now. Thought about it. God knows exactly where you are right now. He knows you're here, and He knows you're worshiping, and you know that makes Him glad. He blesses people when they worship Him. He blesses people when they read His Word. The book of Revelation is the only book I know of that specifically says the person will be blessed when they read the words of this prophecy. But certainly that principle is true of the whole Bible. And so regardless of what verse we look at and study, or what chapter or book or whatever, God blesses us when we do it. I think that's an amazing thought. I think it's a great motivation for all of us. Tonight we are studying somewhat of a dark chapter, Ezekiel chapter 20. By dark, I mean that within it are some uncomfortable thoughts. But not every verse in the Bible is about happiness and everything going well and no problems. That's not what... Not, the Bible is real. The Bible addresses real people about real situations, real happenings. Tonight in Ezekiel chapter 20, to kind of set the stage, the next three chapters in Ezekiel 20 all are about the same thing. They all happen basically at the same time. It's the final series of visions that Ezekiel has before Jerusalem is destroyed. Now, Ezekiel talks after it's destroyed as well, but as far as leading up to Jerusalem being destroyed, 586 BC, this is the final series of visions that he has. 3 years or less, and the city of Jerusalem would be destroyed. The temple destroyed. The city destroyed. The walls torn down. All of that. Ezekiel has been in captivity several years now. He's been prophesying for several years now. He has our situation tonight. We see the elders, the leaders of God's people that's in Babylon, that's been taken captive. They are meeting with Ezekiel and they want to know, they inquire from him, Ezekiel, what's going to happen? What's our future? They knew he was a prophet. We're going to go home soon? Is it going to get better? Is it going to get worse? What's going to happen, Ezekiel? Now, by this time, if they've listened to a single word he said, they know why they are there. Last week, we talked about how many of them were claiming that it was all their forefathers' fault that they were there. They didn't have anything to do with it. Well, Ezekiel's main message to them was, you're just as guilty as your fathers were. Don't try and blame them for everything. Tonight is almost a capsule history of God's people from the time they were in Egypt till the time they arrived in Babylon. Notice Ezekiel chapter 20, and we will begin reading. Notice verse 1, especially the first three or four verses. Came to pass in the seventh year, okay, it's been 7 years now since the beginning of those of the prophecies. In the fifth month, on the tenth day of the month, that certain of the elders of Israel came to inquire of the Lord and sat before me. So you can imagine a group of men sitting there in front of Ezekiel asking him questions. Then the word of the Lord came to me saying, Son of man, speak to the elders of Israel and say to them, Thus says the Lord God, Have you come to inquire of me? As I live, says the Lord God, I will not be inquired of by you. Well, that's quite a way to start out a conversation, a discussion. These elders come to God basically through the prophet and we want to inquire of you, and God says, you're going to inquire of me? I don't think so. You're not going to inquire of me about anything. Why would he answer like that? Why would God through the prophet answer like that? And when we know what Ezekiel's already said, they know exactly why they're there, and they know exactly how long they're going to be there. Those questions have already been told them. They know all that. There wasn't any need for them to inquire of Ezekiel about their situation, about the future, about why they were there. Nothing. All of it had been answered. They knew the reasons. So God comes back and says, no, you're not going to ask me anything. You know why you're here. Verse 4, will you judge them, son of man? Will you judge them? Then make known to them the abominations of their fathers. Now he starts that capsule history of why they are there and everything that's happened to them. And there's tremendous lessons in the next few verses. Things that are just as relevant today as they were 2,500 years ago when this was written. Notice verses 5 through 9. Say to them, thus says the Lord God, on the day when I chose Israel and raised my hand in an oath to the descendants of the house of Jacob and made myself known to them in the land of Egypt, I raised my hand in an oath to them saying, I am the Lord your God. On that day I raised my hand in an oath to them to bring them out of the land of Egypt into a land that I had searched out for them, flowing with milk and honey, the glory of all lands. Then I said to them, each of you, throw away the abominations which are before his eyes, and do not defile yourselves with the idols of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So before we go any further, notice what he's reminding them of. They were captives. They had been captured, and they were slaves in Egypt and had been for several hundred years. God knew they had been there and knew why they were there, but God said, I called you out of there. Remember, he calls them his son. He says, I called you out of Egypt. I'm the one that took you out of Egypt. I was the one that sent those 10 plagues that actually was the way you got out of Egypt. And I caused the Red Sea to open. And I chose this beautiful land, this flowed with milk and honey. God said, I did all of that just for you. You didn't deserve it. God tells them that on more than one occasion, especially back, I believe it's in the book of Deuteronomy. I didn't choose you because of your great size or anything. I didn't choose you because of your great size or anything else. I chose you because I was going to bring my son in the world through you. That's why I chose you. No, you weren't the mightiest, the most powerful, or anything else. But God says, I chose you as my son. And so I brought you out. And he continues in this first little part, but they rebelled against me and would not obey me. They did not all cast away the abominations which were before their eyes, nor did they forsake the idols of Egypt. Then I said, I will pour out my fury on them and fulfill my anger against them in the midst of the land of Egypt. But I acted for my name's sake, that it should not be profaned before the Gentiles among whom they were, and whose sight I had made myself known to them, to bring them out of the land of Egypt. They had been rebellious during that whole time in the wilderness. It wasn't too many weeks ago that we talked about how a 2 or 3 week trip, it should have taken 2 or 3 weeks to go from Egypt, once they crossed the sea, to the land of Canaan. That should have taken 2 or 3, maybe 4 weeks at the most. It took 40 years. If they would have obeyed God, they'd have been there in less than a month. Less than a month. But because they rebelled, it took them 40 years. Why did God do that? Because of that first generation. He wanted to get idolatry out of them then and there. Idolatry was a problem in Egypt, and it was a problem in the wilderness. How long were they in the wilderness before they decided to make a big golden calf? Not very long. So idolatry was a huge problem among God's people. But he says, I chose you, and during this whole time I was taking care of you and protecting you and comforting you. And what were you doing? You were still worshiping idols. Hard to believe. Remember what Joshua said to them? They were going into the land of Canaan that flowed with milk and honey. Read that with me, Joshua 24, verses 14 and 15. Joshua 24, verses 14 and 15. They're going into this land that flowed with milk and honey. He says, Verse 14, "Now therefore fear the Lord, serve Him in sincerity and in truth." Notice how that's God, how God's always wanted to be served. Sincerity and truth. Still does today. Hasn't changed a bit. "And put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the river and in Egypt." It's exactly what he's saying in Ezekiel 20. Serve the Lord. "And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve." It's up to you. "Whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." These were the people that had been in the wilderness. They had grown up in the wilderness. They were going into the land that flowed with milk and honey. But he's still saying, you've got to make a choice. Who are you going to serve? These idols? Egyptian idols? Amorite idols? Canaanite idols? Are you going to serve the Lord? Make that decision. God doesn't want people to try and serve Him and something else at the same time. Man, what a lesson that is. Don't we still try and serve God and something else at the same time? So many try and do both. God says, just make your decision. Just choose what you're going to do. Well, many of God's people, Ezekiel 20, chose the wrong thing. And he reminds them of that fact. Now he says, "Therefore I made them go out of the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness, and I gave them my statutes, showed them my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them." That's all they had to do. He had gave them his judgments, his statutes, his law, and all they had to do was live by them, follow them. "Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them." The Sabbath had such a profound significance for God's people. It was their holy day. It was their day of rest. It was their day to remember that God, first of all, created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh, the Sabbath day. God was the one that had done all that. But it was also something to help them remember that there was a covenant between Him and them. There was a covenant there. And when they recognized that and followed that Sabbath, God blessed them. "So it was to be a sign between them and me. Yet the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They did not walk in my statute. They despised my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. And they greatly defiled my Sabbaths. Then I said I would pour out my fury on them in the wilderness to consume them." Think about how many, had to be hundreds of thousands, if not over a million people, died in the wilderness. That's a lot of people. Remember how 70,000 of them died one time. So there was a bunch of them that died. All because they simply rebelled. But he says, verse 14, "But I acted for my name's sake, that it should not be profaned before the Gentiles in whose sight I had brought them out. So I also raised my hand in an oath to them in the wilderness that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, the glory of all lands, because they despised my judgments and did not walk in my statutes, but profaned my Sabbaths, for their heart went after their idols. Nevertheless, my eye spared them from destruction. I did not make an end of them in the wilderness." That first generation of Israelites were all destroyed, bar two, in that wilderness. Why? Because they were disobedient. Just because they were disobedient. That's what he said. But he spared some of them. Why did he spare any of them at all? Well, one reason, the main reason was the Messiah was coming through them, his son. And you see, you know, just starting really with Adam and Eve. The Messiah was going to come through Adam and Eve, wasn't he? Well, they have two sons. What happens to them? One kills the other one, and the other one gets rejected and is sent away. Now it doesn't look like God's going to have anybody to send a son through. What happened? They raise up another son. Messiah's going to come through them. And you see that happen throughout the Bible, where it looks like the Messiah, there won't be anybody for him to come through. And then something happens. Oftentimes it's miraculous, sometimes it's just providential. And so God kept these people alive, some of them, because the Messiah was coming through them. Notice the next section, the lesson we learn from it. But I said to their children in the wilderness, now we're talking to another generation, do not walk in the statutes of your fathers, nor observe their judgments, nor defile yourselves with their idols. I am the Lord your God. Walk in my statutes, keep my judgments, and do them. Hallow my Sabbaths, and they will be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. Notwithstanding, the children rebelled against me. They did not walk in my statutes and were not careful to observe my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live with him. That's the third time he said that. But they profaned my Sabbaths. And I said I would pour out my fury on them and fulfill my anger against them in the wilderness. Nevertheless, I withdrew my hand and acted for my name's sake. The Messiah was going to come through them, that it should not be profaned in the sight of Gentiles, in whose sight I had brought them out. Also, I raised my hand in an oath to those in the wilderness that I would scatter them among the Gentiles and disperse them through the countries, because they had not executed my judgments, but had despised my statutes, profaned my Sabbaths, and their eyes were fixed on their father's idols. Therefore, I also gave them up to statutes that were not good.